powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN. It is season 5, episode 49 of the Rain Drakes Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series, CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, signature CC Classic 12-year-old whiskey, finished with a secondary aging in Oloroso Sherry Casks. And I feel like I sound marginally better, Ray.
No,
what do you
think?
Am I inching closer? No?
No.
That's too bad.
As you were doing the opening there, I'm like, yeah, he sounds no better. He promised he would sound better on today, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah. I'm feeling a bit better. I don't feel sick. I just sound like a sore you-know-what. So we'll see how the day plays out, because I've got insider trading. Obviously, we're recording the podcast here on Thursday. We've got the Leafs and the Flyers without John Tortorella on the Flyers bench tonight. So maybe if I don't talk for the rest of the day, I'll be okay for that regional game.
Well, I think the people around you will be happier.
You know, especially Holly, no question about that. Why don't we just dive right into the headlines?
Yeah, sure.
Brought to you by Tim Hortons, the iconic roll up to win is back with big prizes. Now until the end of March, you can earn one roll for each eligible purchase. Just be sure to scan for the Tim's Rewards before paying, or use the scan and pay. Every roll revealed earns an entry for a chance to win a Tim's financial $10,000 daily jackpot prize. Big, big money. For the full list of prizes and all the details and more contest information, just log in, check out rollup2win.ca. Thought we'd start with the Colorado Avalanche, Ray, if you're okay with that. And
sure.
Nate McKinnon, because it's top of mind, given how they rolled back into the game last night, Wednesday night, against the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks coach Rick Tocchet at postgame said, quote, McKinnon said, "I'm taking this game." And that's pretty much what happened, didn't it, in that third period? I mean, he had some help with Rantanen and some of the other dynamic pieces of the Colorado Avalanche. But undeniably, this team is a league powerhouse, not just in the West. The Avalanche are the real deal here.
They are for a couple reasons. I did the game last night, so I'm standing between the benches. And a couple things I noticed was Vancouver was almost perfect for 39 and a half minutes. They had a 3-0 lead. The Colorado bench, they didn't look really flustered or frustrated, and that would have been different a couple of years ago. I think you would have been able to see it. A lot of door slamming, that sort of thing. Last night, nothing. They were just plowing ahead in a game that Vancouver was terrific in, and they couldn't get going.
Yep.
Then Georgiev comes out to play the puck and he misses it at 3-0. And it's at a really sharp angle. He turns, stops, and dives back. And as Lindholm shoots the puck at kind of the empty net, it's a sharp angle, but Georgiev gets his stick on it, deflects it wide. Rantanen scored with 1.8 seconds left in the second period. So that was... that was within 20 seconds, right? So it should have been or could have been 4-0.
Right.
Instead, it's 3-1. I'm telling you, Drakes, the entire building sounded and felt different when the puck went in the net. So now it's 3-1, and of course, you don't want to get into the spot where you're defending or whatever, and Vancouver takes a penalty, and they take another one. It's a 5-on-3. Nate laser beams a one-timer to make it 3-2. They score a goal they reviewed for a few seconds to make it 3-3. And then did you see the winner?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. McKinnon's one-timer hits Juleson on the power play in overtime. So 10 seconds left. Soucy's just going to bank it off the glass and he shoots it into the crowd. And Soucy'd had a terrific night.
Yeah,
that's the way it goes, right? So he shoots it hits Juleson. Bounces off of Nichushkin's visor, who's 6'27". I mean, he's a monster. Yeah, it hits him in the face. It goes into the net, and game's over. And so, like that, Colorado won a game they probably shouldn't. And, like, the top end of that roster, it's like, as soon as they smell a little blood, They play the five guys almost exclusively together. Taves, right. McCarr, Nichushkin, Rantanen, and MacKinnon. They're all five are on the ice. So you're, even if things are going well, I'm watching, I'm like, you know what? You can always feel like it doesn't take much for something to go really wrong the other way. Like it's really, they're a fun team to watch.
Strong chance that Devon Taves will join us on the Rain Drakes podcast early next week. I mean, they're traveling, so.
I'll talk to his agent, who's my agent.
Yeah.
No, and, perfect. I said to him earlier in the year, I was trying to do a thing in my contract, and I'm like, no wonder I can't get a hold of Ross Gurney. He's doing your $50 million extension. He's not even returning my phone calls.
There is a priority list when it comes to negotiating certain deals. I'll get that. Just a wrap-up thought, though. You know, the maturity and the confidence that we see in the Avalanche, I mean, that's well-earned, right? That's a byproduct of facing adversity, getting punched in the face a few times, but then also learning how to overcome that adversity and win a Stanley Cup.
Well, I don't know how many years ago it was. You know, quite a few now, but remember back to when MacKinnon and Bednar got into a screaming match on the bench.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was young. That was inexperienced. That's not been through the wars yet. And all that stuff is, you know, you build up scar tissue. And like I watch MacKinnon closely because I'm fascinated with him. I think he's an amazing, amazing player. And not really once last night did he show outwardly any emotion. Like, remember back just even before they won the cup, he would come back and slam the door and break his stick on the bench and yell and scream at somebody. None of that. And you follow your leader.
You really
do. And I think that's of the things I was impressed with. That really stood out for me last night.
How about Zach Hyman, Ray? If we shift over to the Edmonton Oilers, another hat trick, the fourth hat trick of the year for Hyman. I believe that's his fifth of his career. I mean, did you have Zach Hyman pegged at any point as a 50-goal scorer? I didn't.
No. 50 goals is incredibly hard. And of course he plays with McDavid, which is a great benefit.
Helps.
But
yeah.
But other guys could score 50 goals too, and they don't. I mean, it's really hard to do. You unwind all the way back to, you know, he was a Florida Panther draft pick, a seventh round pick. He wasn't going to sign in Florida. The Red Wings were pretty hot on Dylan Larkin at the time.
Yeah.
And when they were looking at Larkin at the University of Michigan, they were, you know, Mike Babcock was on to Zach Hyman. You know, it's kind of like the type of player Babcock would glom onto. And so when he got to Toronto, they made a trade. I forget who the player was that went down there, but it was a player for a seventh round pick. And you know who it was? I'm almost certain. I think Ryan Rashog can do a little research. I think it was Carter Verhaeghe.
It is, yeah.
And it's turned out pretty damn well for in his career. I don't know if I got that right. Now I'm second guessing myself. Are you checking that?
I am.
Hang on. It was McCaig.
Okay. Rights were traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs on June 19th.
I know this is great. This is great to listen to, but it's McCaig.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't Verhaeghe.
All right. Okay.
Well, you know, anyway. You gave up looking on it. You gave up.
Well, I'm trying to like run a podcast.
This is your sole work right now. It's a focus to get the trade right. Anyway, you went to Toronto for a seventh round pick, and I thought he was a 20 goal guy. If he was going to be anything because of I thought he was the third line guy. Remember they had him and Connor Brown together and they traded Brown because they liked Hyman better. And then he ended up with Matthews and damn, he's been money this year, like money. What an amazing piece of that team, because it's not just the goals. The goals are amazing, but it's the rest of it too.
June 19th, 2015, the Panthers trade Zach Hyman and a conditional seventh-round draft pick to the Toronto Maple Leafs in exchange for Greg McKegg. So the pick was never given to Toronto, as it was on the condition that Hyman didn't sign with the Maple Leafs, which ultimately obviously did. So we eventually got there. We got it right.
Well, see, but that's the digging. Yeah. I think you just showed a little bit of the Drager dog on a bone.
Yeah.
Although a slow dog on the bone there, I might add. But
it was a bit, it was a bit sluggish. Let's just, so if you're the Maple Leafs, now there's no, Carter Verhaeghe is a classic example. We skirted it up, but we brought his name up. I mean, if you knew what Carter Verhaeghe was going to be, obviously you never let him leave the organization. But I remember all of the reporting and the opinion on what Kyle Dewey should do with Zach Hyman. You know, it clearly was a cap-related decision not to give him the 8 years or whatever the money is. But at $5.5 million now for what, another 4 years in Edmonton, provided his body can hold up and looks like he's pretty solid right now.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a deal, isn't it?
Well, it is, but what's going to happen is there's going to be an age decline, right? Like it's going to happen to everybody. I don't know why he would be different than than everyone else.
Yeah.
But at that point, people will focus on what is the player then and forget the previous 6 years.
Yeah.
Like this guy is a workhorse. He's a solid citizen. Like in your locker room, you need steadiness. And Hyman is steadiness. I think a lot of him as a person. I mean, like if people have gotten the chance to talk to him and or to just listen to him do an interview, he is a solid, solid person. And I'm happy for him. I'm happy to see him score. And I'm quite honestly amazed that he's at the total he's at, because it's it's just a crazy number. It's a crazy number to be at.
It is. It is. By the way, Connor Brown scored a goal. I mean, that's kind of big news in Edmonton, right? His first goal of the year, and the way he scored it was, kind of Connor Brown-like.
Well, I don't know. What is Connor Brown like right now, poor guy? I mean, like
just go in the net. I don't care if it goes off a leg, the arse.
Before Christmas, Rage, there was he scored, and it got reviewed and taken back. And it was,
Yeah.
It was kind of funny at Christmas, and then it's not funny anymore.
It's not funny. No.
And so when they were zipping hats on the ice yesterday and going bonkers for him, I was thinking, and we were talking just off air before you jumped on about, and my opinion, man, he must have been almost embarrassed by it. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, this is ridiculous. I'm 60 games or whatever into the season. I'm now just pulled ahead of both goalies.
Yeah.
Like that would be a tough one.
How difficult would it be to maintain your level of confidence? Like nobody would peg Connor Brown coming into this year as a 25 goal guy, but you do expect him to chip in. I mean, in some capacity, shorthanded, whatever, you know, I mean, he plays in the NHL. He's scored, his share in the National Hockey League. So his confidence, the fact that he has maintained a level of confidence, it speaks to his level of character.
I don't know that he's maintained a level of confidence. What he's maintained is a work rate, I think what you're saying, or in a different way, but I think that's not easy to do either, because each day the bag of rocks that you carry around on your back.
Yeah.
Someone adds two more to it. And man, it, you know, there's all the time too. We see the games, but then you got to extrapolate that out. That's a big word for you, Drakes. You got to stretch that out, and it's all day. It never goes away. You go to practice, you grind your way through practice, you do a workout, you grind your way through a workout. The game is supposed to be the fun part. And I would think, part of his psyche would be that, oh my God, everybody in the building is looking at me not scoring again. Like I would, that's how I'm pretty sure I would have felt it. Don't forget, I think in season one, He was with Ottawa. We had him on. He had 8 goals in 8 games.
Yeah.
You know, like he, it's yeah, not yeah. like he, I thought he would be a coming off of ACL stuff that he missed all of last year. I thought he'd be,
yeah,
I don't know, 10 or 12 goals this year.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have to get hot.
Connor Bedard, speaking of hot, man, he's on a bit of a clip here, right? 8 yeah. points in 2 games, including that 5-pointer in 1 game the other night. I mean, nothing from a point production perspective should be overly surprising about Bedard. So when you look back at the season that he's had, you know, injury aside, yeah. what do you think will be your takeaway? Like, what will be the most impressive thing? Just, again, you know, we mentioned confidence with Brown. Just how he was able to step in the National Hockey League as a teenager and show some of that flash that we saw in Major Junior.
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to be able to handle or carry the puck with the regularity yeah. that he does. And part of it is he's good enough to do it. I just didn't know that he would be able to do it this year. Right. In particular, it's not like he's got a bunch of creative guys around him. Like, holy smokes. There's some nights there you look at that and you're like, I know they're building and they're building for the future, but I would think in the summer they got to spend a little bit of money and get somebody to, you know, to be able to play give and go with him. Because right now they don't have it. Like,
yeah.
what's he got, 50 points or yeah. whatever in 53 games?
It's crazy.
It's really a...
Yeah.
It's really a pretty incredible feat. He's had an excellent year.
He has. I like the personality that we're starting. And maybe it's because that's the world that he's grown up in, right? You know, they got a microphone on this kid all the time, which I enjoy it as a fan. I enjoy it from a media perspective. I would hate it if I were him or I were his teammate. Because as we caught the other night, you know, the exchange with the official where he's politely telling the official to get out of the way. Like you're impeding my ability to make a play based on where you're standing. But that, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. He did it politely. There was a bit of an exchange and the official had some fun with him and said, well, you're fast, I'm slow. So there's not much I can do about it.
There is, there's plenty of ways that guys tell officials to move.
Yeah.
And not all of them sound like that.
No.
You know,
no.
Like, so I most of the time when a guy's mic'd up, well, almost all the time, unless yeah. it's kind of an ambient pickup, it goes through the truck. It gets approved before it gets on the air.
Yeah.
You know, so like there is a filter to it. Like last night, there was no filter on Quinn Hughes had a penalty.
And that's awesome.
He goes to the box. And well, no, actually, I'm trying to think. I mean, the game was all of last night, but I forget who the official was. And he said, would you please get in the penalty box? It was like Jim Hughes telling Quinn to go clean up his dishes. He's like, would you please get in the penalty box? And I mean, that mic pickup could turn yeah. out to be a lot different.
Oh, sure.
For different guys, you know, it sounds a lot different.
I also like... You know, the combination of Foligno and Bedard is hilarious right. because, you know, there's been so many of those exchanges that have been caught on microphone. You know, Foligno talked to you about how he's never going to be able to retire because he has too much to teach Connor Bedard, you know, as to how to be a real good NHL pro and all of that. I mean, Nick Foligno is perfectly cast and a great signing in whatever capacity you want right. to describe. In Chicago with Connor Bedard.
He is, and I had similar age shake my headness at the end of my career when I had Patrick Steph, and we had our family had him over for dinner, and Patrick was 18 and my son was 12 and I was 36. So they had more in common than I had with Patrick, and he was on my team. And
yeah.
I saw Nick at Chris Chelios' retirement weekend, and I asked him, you know, I told him the story. He's like, oh, absolutely. They're in the basement playing, like, knee hockey and stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'm no, too tired. It's pretty funny stuff.
It is. Less funny, just the mood around the Detroit Red Wings right now, right? I mean, it probably feels to the Red Wings like a good start in the positives of the first half anyway, and part of the second half are kind of dwindling here, and they're letting an opportunity kind of leak away, and that's a playoff opportunity. There's still time. There's still time. They're in the conversation for sure. Lucas Raymond and Ben Chiarot involved in a tussle. Not a fight. It wasn't even a wrestling match. It was a tussle during a Red Wings practice on Wednesday. I mean, you just told a story, you know, around Patrick Steffen when you were 36, he was 18. Back in your day, a fight in practice wasn't that big of a deal, was it? Because it probably happened, what, a number of times, if not several times over the course of the year, depending on, you know, how your team was playing, clearly.
Well, I would say there would be one or two per year. There would be plenty of forward and defensemen, because didn't see it, but I'm
battle
guessing
grills, all of that.
Yeah, right? I was guessing it was around the front of the net, and
it was. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And Chiarot probably was, you know, shoving him out of the way, and Raymond got tired of it. Chiarot, and Raymond probably got tired and slashed him, and then off they go. And it is not fun. You know, I was talking about Brown about it being in every moment of every day. It's not just the games that we see. So the Wings are getting, not only are they losing, they're getting their ass handed to them here. Like, they're getting blown out on a regular basis. And it feels like all that good work we did is now gone.
Yeah.
And right now they're in the point where they likely feel like they'll never win again. And it's frustrating, and, you know, it's scary for your season because you can see it slipping away. So when I read this, I was getting ready for the game yesterday. I didn't take the time to look at it, but I was like, oh, that didn't surprise me in the least. I mean, every game they're giving up 5 and 6 goals and just blown out of the water. Eventually the pressure has to release a little bit, and the guys afterward, guaranteed, maybe not those two, but everybody else will be having a giggle about it. And the other guys will have a giggle about it later on. And then it just, sometimes it can help you just release the steam a little bit.
Okay, well, I want you to expand on that and ask Ray and Driggs, because we have a question, I believe, from Dan in Windsor specific to that and whether it can be a good thing. So we'll revisit that whole scenario. Let's wrap up headlines with the Nashville Predators, Ray. And, I mean, your buddy Andrew Burnett has his team clicking. 13 games with at least 1 point. And, I mean, they're comfortably locked in a wild card spot right now. Not that they're taking their foot off the pedal, clearly. Big win. You know, we talk about measuring sticks or statement games, you know, which is hard when you're at this point of the regular season. But if you're in Nashville and you've gone through the struggles that you've already been through this year, and you play a juggernaut team like the Winnipeg Jets, who we talked about on Tuesday here on the podcast, and you come out of that game with a win, decisive win, over that team. I know Rick Bonus was sour post game. He was sour, but, you know, credit where credit is due. Nashville is humming right now.
They are. I think we probably joked that they'll never go to a concert again because the streak started after they canceled their trip to the Sphere after smashed at home. So there, we can tie that into Detroit. You know, they lost 9-2 at home. Nashville did. And since then, they've got 13 games in a row with a point out, because that's when they canceled the triple to Vegas and to go see go to the Sphere. They were not thinking, oh, this is a playoff team. They thought maybe we'd be around the edges, but they were debating at a certain point whether to sell and move on or to be more competitive and bring in, and they kind of stayed the course. You know, they thought they were going to trade Novak, who's a good player, and they ended up signing him to a 3-year extension. And they play a fast, like, offensively minded game, and they're kind of fun to watch. If you haven't watched them much, watch them. But they are in a good spot. And this is how freaking hard this league is. You talk about the Jets are a juggernaut. Their last three games, they got pumped in Vancouver 5-0.
Yeah.
They won a terrific game at home. They were excellent on Monday. And then at home again, they got thumped by Nashville. It was 4-0 before they scored. So it's a hard league, man. There's no time to ever really be comfortable.
No.
And Winnipeg's week has really been an example of that.
Yeah. I mean, UC Saros for the Preds, 8-0-2 in his last 10. Yeah. I never bought the trade speculation. I didn't. I can understand and appreciate Barry Trotz being okay with that being out there, right? You know, because you never know. Maybe somebody makes you an absurd offer and you have to consider it. Feel for the player and all of that. But you look at the quality of the goaltending that they get on a night-in, night-out basis from UC Saros. Come on. So
every goalie 6 feet in the world should be throwing bouquets to UC Saros because
no kidding.
I remember when he was drafted, David Poile told us that if he was 6'2", he would have been a first round pick. They got him in the fourth round.
Yeah.
And because people were scared of his size. Interesting will be in the summer. They'll get through. They've got a terrific prospect that they drafted in the first round a few years ago. Yaroslav Askarov. And he's having a great year in Milwaukee and will be really interesting to watch him because he's the next one. And the last time we saw him, he was this wild, out of control, athletic goalie at the World Juniors. And then he's been in the American League and I guess he's just knocking it out of the park right now. So that'll be a decision for the summer.
And that's the reason why you even allow that trade speculation, right? I mean, if they don't have that coming, then Saros is extended and we're not even having this conversation. Right. And there was no speculation at this point. All right. Those are your headlines. Thank you, Tim Hortons.
Ready to roll? All right. Let's roll.
Whoa. I'm rolling in it.
Play the 60th anniversary edition of Roll Up to Win on the Tim's app today.
Our interviews on Rain Dregs brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the CC Invitation Series, CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, all the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club, with the added richness and sweetness of sherry. Ask Rain Dregs anything. You can send us your questions on X and Instagram at Rain Dregs or on the website rainanddregs.com. And have you ever been to Rocky Mountain House, Ray? Because I've never
been
to Rocky Mountain.
Nope. I have not.
All right. Well, Joanne in Rocky Mountain House has an interesting question. How hard is it for teams who are in a playoff fight or were in a playoff fight, yet sellers at the trade deadline to maintain morale down the stretch as their playoff hopes dwindle? And in parentheses, Joanne puts Calgary, the Calgary Flames. How difficult is that? Because I'm sure you've been in that spot.
Well, it's obviously harder for the older guys. Because they've seen the movie before, they have a good indication of what their team is and where their team is headed. And unfortunately, as much as you can tell yourself, and if you do meditation, it tells you to be in the moment and just worry about today and not tomorrow because you can't control tomorrow. You sit there in the season, you lose, and you think about the game, you think about the next game, you think about the summer, you think about next year. And morale-wise, it's brutal for it. It's really hard to not let it affect the work because that's basically what it comes down to. Because when you move those players, you're not going to be as good. So if your level of quality is going to drop, which it does, and your work rate among the team drops as well, another 5%, well, you're not even close. Like they played Colorado three nights ago, and it wasn't even the same league.
Agreed.
And they looked demoralized. To the question, you know who else looks like that is Pittsburgh.
Yes.
They look totally like the air is out of their tires. And man, is it 5 in a row? They've been outscored 17-3. Like they're just getting hammered.
Floundering.
And it's the same thing. It's next door to impossible to keep your energy up. And the message at some point will come from the coach or the general manager that, you know, it's more for Calgary than Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh's got so many guys that are locked into contracts, but it will come into, you know, you're all playing to stay in this league.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're playing to stay here. You're playing to stay in Calgary. If you want to be part of it, these games are super important. Like that message will come. If it hasn't yet, it'll come very soon.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to Dan in Windsor, who talked about the situation with the Red Wings and the Sherratt Raymond fight, scuffle at best. Any good stories about teammates fighting in practice that you can think of? And if you want to expand on what you said, in some ways it's venting, but it can be good for the team moving forward.
Why? I remember a couple of that were not good, because it didn't just have to do with frustration. It was a couple of guys that didn't like each other, and that was not good. I do recall, like in Hartford, like Kevin Dineen and old Salmon predictably getting into it. And Fred, they were like chopping wood in front of the net. And then eventually, like it ends, some, you know, guys get in there and separate them. And then, you know, they, after a short bit of time, they're like best buddies, right? Like they're good friends and they just, they laugh at it. I don't know what happened. We were doing a power play drill in Hartford, and Bradshaw, who's the associate coach in Philly, and I were good friends. And he was cross-checking me or something, and I slashed him or something. I don't recall. And we ended up in kind of a non-stick-dropping, non-glove-dropping fight. So it was just kind of – you can imagine how ridiculous that looked. So anyways, again, I don't think anybody tried too hard to break it up because it just stopped because it was ridiculous. And so I go home after practice, and my wife at the time says, yeah, the Shaws are coming over for dinner tonight. And I'm like, oh, really? And Brad and I just had a fight in practice. And she's like, dude, should I cancel? And I said, no, we'll be fine. And so they came for dinner, and it was fine. So
he walks in the door, and you have a chuckle and shake hands and
absolutely.
Get over it?
I remember just like kind of laughing at him when he came in the door, and he laughed at me, and then we had dinner. And that was it.
That's outstanding. Because I would think too, I mean, obviously you were buddies, but there is this thought that all teammates are pals. Well, that's not real. That's not how life is, right? I mean, your work environment, this is your work environment. Yes, you have to work together for a common goal, but that doesn't mean you like each other or like everybody that you're sitting beside or playing with.
Well, just think of it like this. So there's a guy that just doesn't, you guys just don't drive, right? It just doesn't work. And so you go to practice, and then you go on an 8-day road trip. So now you get to the plane, you're flying on the same plane. You get on a bus, you're on the same bus. You go to pregame meals, there's only four tables or five tables, so you're sitting there. Then you go into the locker room. Then you go to the game. Then you get on the bus. Then you, like, if you don't like the guy, if there's two guys that are like, you know, rub up, you know, and they bug each other, well, you're going to be stepping on each other's toes. Like, there's no way. It's not like you can go home. Like, you're always right back there. And so, it's not like everybody's favorite people are around there all the time.
All right, let's take one more and ask me and Rick to anything. This one is from Dale in Winnipeg, who says, love the show, guys. Thank you, Dale. Ray, you seem to be on the road an awful lot. Yes, you are on the road an awful lot. So how do you pass the time on flights? Hold on. I will say you do a lot of work on flights. You're prepping for whatever game you're heading to next. And in certain weeks, there's more than a couple of games. So you're trying to get ahead, right? Yeah. So beyond the obvious of working as hard as you do, is it movies? Are you listening to music? Do you converse with strangers that you're seated next to? I mean, Dale wants to know what's going on in Ray's world on an airplane.
I would say 70% of the time I'm working, 15% of the time I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
And as far as conversing, that's a dangerous one. If I get to three questions about NHL stuff. Like, there's different. Okay, so if somebody recognizes me and we have a conversation, that's totally fine, totally good. When the person asks a question just as an opening so he can tell me everything that he knows about the league, I generally ask him what he does and then ask him 8 questions about what he does. Because eventually doesn't want to talk about himself either.
No, like, boy, you're a better man than me.
Like, I don't know. I like to talk to people. I really, as you know, I mean, I'll talk to just about anybody, but right. It's there is a point where I'm like, no, not now. I don't have it. I don't have it in the, and I'm sure there are times where people go, man, that guy was a jerk. He didn't want to talk about my favorite team, but sometimes I'm just like, I'm worn out. And you're right. The travel's the hardest part of the job for sure, because I am gone a lot. And so what's evolved over the years, I'll say, is I don't do much work at home. I do most of my reading while the kids are at school, like that sort of prep. But once 3 o'clock rolls around, like I'm done for the day.
Excellent. All right. Well, what's your weekend look like as we wrap up Rand Riggs?
I just, I got an alert as we were talking here to check in for my flight tomorrow. I'm going to Pittsburgh. I'm sure it'll be a happy group of Penguins when we get there. Boston is in. Is it Boston? Yeah. No, Rangers tomorrow. Sorry. Saturday. Rangers are rolling along here. They're really, really on a great stretch. And so Rangers at Pittsburgh Saturday. Home Sunday, and then 2 Canuck games next week at home. So those are home. So those are really so a busy week, but most of it at home. So Florida. How about you? What are you going to Florida? When?
Sunday morning. You know what? I always look forward to the March GM meetings, mostly because, you know, they get in these breakout groups, right? And it's not just NHL general managers. It's, you know, other people from around the NHL head office and whatnot. And they talk about interesting stuff, tweaking of rules and all of those things. The March meetings for me are always the best because, you know, they're looking also forward to the playoffs. As an example, remember the Kreider goal? Was it early in January where he stopped up on the puck? So he literally went into the stopping motion and propelled the puck into the net, right?
Right.
And I remember having that exchange with Coley Campbell at the time. And I'm like, I understand why it should count. And he was like, I hate that play. And every time I brought it up, the manager's, no, we need to allow that. And, you know, he goes back to the old, okay, what if it happens against you in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final? Right. Like, they're always projecting the what ifs with the playoffs looming. So, well, I'm looking forward to it.
They should project them. When I hear that, I think about the absolute mess that the offside rule has become, because Matt Duchene was 72 feet offside and some linesman happened to miss it.
Right.
And so we've already got distinct kicking motion. I think we can pretty well tell. We've pretty well worked that rule to the point you can tell almost immediately whether it is or is not a goal. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
So now you're going to determine, is he stopping to stop? Is he stopping to redirect the puck? Like,
It gets pretty complicated.
Just leave it. It's fine.
Another thing that they'll be talking about, I don't know if it'll gain traction, but I know you're an advocate of this, is, you know, the fact that there's no cap compliancy in the postseason. Now, again, that's a complex issue because you got to bring the Players Association into it and all of that. But I do know that the league is expecting some form of push from 4 or 5 teams. You know, just to, again, let's explore the discussion. Is there an appetite to even go down that road from a league and a Players Association perspective? So things like that. You know, I don't know. Might be eye glazing for the hockey fan out there, but
I would say, Dregs, is this not the meeting though? That if people are expecting big change, this is not the one.
No, this is the one where if there's a rule tweak or rule change, normally it comes out of this meeting and then goes to the competition committee and so on. So
yeah, I mean, this is more like setting the table up. Yeah. And, you know, and looking, looking forward to
it's going to come under fire a little bit here.
Oh,
you'll be surprised. Not even a little bit surprised. George Parros, Department of Player Safety. Yeah. He's preparing a more expansive presentation than what he normally would give at the GM meetings. And good on George. I think this is, all right, all the noise around the Morgan Riley suspension, here's why it elevated to this number of games. And then show the comparison to, you know, a suspension of one game or two games and why that was that. And then you get peppered by all the managers until Commissioner Bettman stands up and says, okay, I've had enough of your nonsense. We're moving on now. That's what normally happens, but this one's going to have a little bite to it. So stay tuned. We'll talk about it on Tuesday, right?
I like that. And there is no part of the NHL mechanism that frustrates fans more than, I think, than player safety.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is, and this is not just on George, this has been, you know, this has been longstanding, but this is what we're talking about. And so is the lack of consistency and the lack of understanding.
That's the word. That's the word.
But if the understanding is this sort of play gets you this sort of range, I think people would be much more understanding of it. The fact that it seems all over the place, that it's not good. It's not good for the game that there is that lack of understanding. It's not good for the image of the game that there's a lack of understanding about what the rules really are going to, how the rules are going to be enforced.
So there you go. I mean, we've already got the podcast basically mapped out for Tuesday. Devon Taves hopefully be a part of that from the Colorado Avalanche, and we'll revisit all the goings on at the GM meeting.
That'll give you more time to stroll the beach in your Speedo and,
you know, maybe the salt water, the salt air will help kind of clear me out a little bit.
Well, it can't do you any worse. It's like, it's not like working for, you know, like, and you like the tanning, right? You like to tan. You're a big tanner.
Yeah. There'll be no tanning. There'll be zero. There might be a walk on the beach, but there'll be no tanning. I do have a quick, let's wrap up with this. Ryan Rashog planking story on the beach from years ago.
Oh, I'd like to hear.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, he, you know, felt like he was in really good shape. And I think I had my family on the beach at the time with lovely Holly, Katie, and Mason. And Ryan decided that he was going to show off and show everybody on the beach that he could plank for like 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
I'm laughing because I know you're leaving out some details of this,
which
is great, but I want to hear how it ended. So,
well, you know what? He's going to be so sour that I'm sharing this.
Yeah, I'm making my Ryan Dregs debut right now to defend myself. Mason challenged me to a planking competition. It's his idea, which I lost, by the way.
Yeah, that could be true, but I think Mason at the time, Mason Dreger was like 9, something like that. So. Anyway, just envision if you can Ryan Rashog, you know, in his trunks, planking for everybody to see.
I can't see how that ever was going to turn out well.
We're all still envisioning you in a Speedo, which Ray laid out nicely, Greg.
Yeah, no, let's not go there.
Yeah, he wandered right past that quite quickly.
I did. All right, Ray. Ryan, thanks for joining us there. We appreciate that.
Well, and, have a good weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we're getting down to the good stuff now. There's not much left.
No. And thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs, our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. And yes, thank you for rating, for sharing, for listening, and for following us on the Ray and Dregs YouTube channel as well. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.